propose definitions for gender identity, sexual orientation, trans or transgender identities, gender expression, sex, and sex characteristics. These definitions are based on the Yogyakarta principles, as well as Malta's groundbreaking Gender Identity, Gender Expression, and Sex Characteristics Act. We find that this piece of legislation is a good guiding legislation in terms of foreign law that can be considered when dealing with hate crimes or hate speech against LGBTQI plus persons, but also just generally to see as what is considered as best practice. Then moving on to the offense of a hate crime, we commend the list of characteristics for its inclusivity. We are nonetheless concerned that the reference to one or more of the following characteristics or perceived characteristics may be deemed as exhaustive, and we therefore recommend the removal of one or more, and rather replacing it with or any characteristic or perceived characteristics. And our reasoning there is that a bill as important as this one should ensure that all persons who have experienced a hate crime can be protected. It also ensures that analogous grounds can be added in future without having to necessarily amend the legislation. Just in terms of specific grounds that are included, we see with the offense of hate crimes in Section 1, subsection K, that reference is made to nationality, migrant, or refugee status. We would recommend that or asylum seeker status be included, or reference to even undocumented individuals. And this is simply to ensure that all persons who reside in South Africa can be protected against hate crimes and hate speech, just also in light of the xenophobia issues that we do see flaring up across the country. Then in respect of section 41A subsection 2 or II, again, with regard to inclusivity, we see that reference is made again to one or more of the grounds, and we would just would like to recommend that this be that hate speech includes where the promotional propagation of hatred based on real or perceived characteristics, including, again, just for inclusivity and ensuring that analogous grounds can be included without amendment of the legislation. Moving on to the offense of hate speech. So the offense of hate speech sets out that it would not apply if it is done in good faith in the course of engagement in various activities, and our concern arises in respect of including any academic or scientific inquiry. We submit that the inclusion of this less restrictive freedom of scientific research does not necessarily comply with Section 16(2) of the Constitution, which restricts freedom of expression where it advocates hatred that is based on race, ethnicity, gender, or religion, or that constitutes incitement to cause harm. We are concerned that the inclusion of only a good faith restriction requirement for the freedom of scientific research may be an unreasonable lowering of standards contained in Section 16 of the Constitution. And in this regard, we would like to refer the committee specifically to the highly criticized study entitled Age and Education-Related Effects on Cognitive Functioning in Colored South African Women, which purported that colored women in South Africa have an increased risk for low cognitive functioning as they present with low education levels and unhealthy lifestyle behaviors. We find that this extremely discriminatory and prejudicial study, which caused a great uproar in the scientific and South African community at large, would arguably pass the good faith standard contained in this current bill, while simultaneously then infringing on numerous constitutional provisions. As such, we recommend rewording of the provision in line with the Constitution. Finally, I would like to touch on penalties or orders. Currently, the bill focuses on a wide range of penalties or orders that might be suitable when dealing with persons or groups who have committed hate speech or hate crimes. It focuses on, for example, imprisonment, periodical imprisonment, fine, correctional supervision, amongst others. We submit that although imprisonment or a fine may be appropriate in some serious instances or for repeat offenders, it won't necessarily contribute towards the reform of individuals who commit these crimes. And this is just because, of course, hate crimes and hate speech stems essentially from intolerances towards a particular group based on their characteristics. Imprisonment and fines won't cultivate the necessary awareness of the inherent dignity of all persons, regardless of their inherent characteristics. So our submission is that although reference is made to correctional supervision, that they should be added to correctional supervision some specifics. So, for example, the inclusion of community service at an organization or governmental department that works with the affected group, or, for example, the completion of sensitization courses on the issue that affects the particular group. But in this regard, we do just want to draw attention to that it is not our recommendation that perpetrators should have direct access to the affected group, where it will, of course, affect the particular group negatively, and where it is possible for them to access affected groups in a safe way, this would be absolutely supervised. And our reasoning behind our recommendations here is simply that reform or rehabilitation may be more effective in promoting broader tolerance and acceptance instead of imprisonment, which might not have the same effect. This, of course, also depends on the seriousness of the hate crime or hate speech and an assessment of whether rehabilitation or reform is in fact necessary. We trust and hope that our submissions are useful to the committee. Appreciate and commend the committee on adopting such a bill because it is very necessary in the South African context, and it will go a long way towards curbing and addressing hate speech and hate crimes. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Kruse from the Legal Resources Center. Are there any questions, members, or comments? Honorable Stewart.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning to the guests. I would just like to raise one or two issues with the representative from the Legal Resources. Firstly, thanking Ms. Kruse for the submission. Many people are in support of the hate crimes aspect, but there are a lot of questions around whether the hate speech aspect is necessary given the existing provisions in other legislation, in particular the PAPUDA and powers existing, and the fact that that legislation has already been interpreted by the courts. Would you not, think that the fact of including hate speech provisions adds another possibly unnecessary dimension which now needs to be interpreted by the courts? That's the first aspect. We fully support the hate crimes aspect, but there's been a lot of debate about separating the two aspects. Secondly, just to touch on your comments relating to penalties, in particular the criminal approach as opposed to the PAPUDA approach, which is more restorative, would you suggest, and I think you've already touched on that, community service and that, but would you consider, as we've heard from the Restorative Justice Centre, a restorative justice approach, and you might wish to just to amplify what you've already said, would you consider wording in regarding the aspects which you raised to assist the committee with particular wording as we look at that whole aspect? Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sart. Dr. Kruse.
Thank you so much for the questions in this regard. The Legal Resources Center, although we understand that PIPEDA and other pieces of legislation has included hate speech under their ambit. We find that if you deal with a hate crimes bill, hate speech inevitably comes into play, because at some stage hate speech does in fact become a hate crime. So we find that should the hate speech or hate crimes bill come legislation and hate speech is declared as a crime, this will have to be read, of course, with other pieces of legislation that refer to the same crimes, as well as be read with constitutional provisions that already provide for it. It will, of course, depend on the wording of it to ensure that there is no inconsistencies and that the hate speech bill, in fact, add to, for example, PIPEDA and does not take away anything from it. There may be also situations leading to the penalties part of your question. In certain instances, hate speech might require a criminal approach instead of a community service or restorative justice approach. We did not recommend a particular wording for the community service aspect of the bill at this time. However, we can consider it. We are, we just did not at this time have a specific recommendation regarding wording, but it would be based on a recommendation that community service should be done at an organization or government department that works with the affected group, and then of course the completion of sensitization courses. I hope that answers the questions.
So
I can expand.
So Ms. Croza, so you are saying that there is a need for hate speech?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Mr. Dupris?
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I know I'm supposed to be an observer today, but I appreciate you allowing me to just ask the legal resources one question, and that is with regard to the recommendation in respect of Clause 3 to transform that closed list into an open list. I would just like to know, by of course, removing the words one or more, which I don't really think it takes any further, but in any event, they want an open-ended list, and I just would like to know whether they think that will be in line with the principle of legality. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. You are always welcome, Mr. Dupris, to ask questions, because as you would be responding on behalf of the department, it's important that you have a clear understanding of what the...
Thank you, Chair. Much appreciated.
Yes, Dr. Cruza?
Yes, thank you so much for the question, Mr. Dupria. This is something that I considered in length when we drafted our recommendations, and I did sit with this issue of legality, and I then went back to Section 9 of the Constitution, which, as you may know, provides an open-ended ground to discrimination, and under international law, similarly, you have provisions which deals with discrimination. You even have it under the African Charter of Human and People's Rights, where when you refer to discrimination grounds, you always include or generally include, you have your listed grounds and then you include any other status or any other ground. And our recommendation here is simply to ensure that the bill speaks to the Constitution as well as international law in referring to open-ended grounds. And the reasoning behind this really is to ensure that it doesn't mean that anything will be included, but the consideration is whether there is an identifiable group which has been negatively affected by this ground. So for example, we can take the African Charter of Human and People's Rights, sexual orientation would not necessarily be directly included, or perhaps I should use disability as an example, because that has been included now through interpretation that the issue is you need to identify a group that has been discriminated against or, for example, subjected to hate speech or hate crimes, then determine whether that group should be protected under a piece of legislation and then include them. the reason for then referring to any other status or any other group or other grounds is just to ensure that this does not need to go to amendment every single time, but rather that through courts, for example, you can take situations and consider, you know, what has changed in society for us to include this group under the ambit of protection and whether that group should be protected.
Thank you very much, Dr. Cruiser from the Legal Resources Center. Thank you for the presentation. It will be considered when the bill is being processed. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Ramana, which organization is on the virtual platform now?
Yes, Chair. We've got Same Love, they are on the platform.
Thank you very much. Same Love. Can Same Love?
Yes, good day, sir. Do you want me to present it now?
Yes.
Okay.
Can we give you 1 minute? Let's start at 25 past.
Okay, I'm just getting the document ready. But I'll be ready shortly.
Mr. Raman, what were you saying?
No, I just wanted to find out if there's anybody from Stella Brini Center.
Is there anybody from that center? Organizations, please note that if you are not available for today for your slots, we won't take you tomorrow. We are operating under time pressure, so if you are not available today, so tomorrow we'll be focusing on those organizations that are supposed to be presenting tomorrow.
Are you able to see my screen?
Yes, we can. Please proceed, Ms. Tote.
Thank you. Good day, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members and colleagues. Thank you, Honourable Chair, for this opportunity to give oral presentation on the combating and prevention of hate crime and hate speech bill. On behalf of Same Love Toti and the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, intersex, gender non-conforming and queer community. Sorry, I'm trying to get my page to go. Okay. Same Love Toti is a registered non-profit organisation that works to strengthen LGBTQI rights in South Africa and provides services to sexual and gender minorities. My name is Kim Lithgow. I am the founder and director of Same Love Toti. Same Love Toti is also part of the Hate Crimes Working Group and other coalitions that work toward social cohesion and inclusion in society. Our former president, Nelson Mandela, famously said, "For to be free is not merely to cast off one's chains, but to live in a way that respects and enhances the freedom of others." Our constitution is based on those ideals of no discrimination. It affords freedom to sexual and gender minorities and other marginalized groups. But this is not the lived reality of lesbian women, gay men, transgender men and women, non-binary people, intersex people, and gender non-conforming people. The LGBT community is not safe in South Africa. They are not safe in schools, they are not safe in their communities, and they are not safe in their homes. In 2021, over 21 LGBT people were murdered. In 2022, the murders continue. Musa Zulu was murdered on Freedom Day. Pinky Shongwe was murdered in March. And just this Saturday gone was Pinky's memorial service in her hometown in the Baboit Township. But in spite of this, there is still no hate crime legislation. We need the South African government to take a strong stand against hate crime and pass this bill swiftly. Hate crime will provide justice for the victims, for their families, and for the greater community. Hate crime legislation will protect the human rights of the individual. When the majority do not adequately respect the rights of minorities, hate crime legislation will provide hate crime statistics, and hate crime statistics will provide insight into creating effective strategies to prevent hate crimes and discrimination. Hate crime legislation will save lives. According to the Progressive Truth Study, which is in the public domain, there are 2.8 million gender non-conforming women and 450,000 gender non-conforming men, and 530 men and women who self-describe themselves as sexually diverse and or gender diverse. That's 3,780,000 people in South Africa. In a democratic country, we should not have to fight for the right to live. Of those surveyed, most people said that they would not hurt people who are gender non-conforming or lesbian or gay or transgender or intersex. But 450,000 openly admitted to hurting gender non-conforming women. 250,000 admitted to beating up gender non-conforming men. 700,000 had verbally abused gender non-conforming people. And 3 million said that they might consider committing violence against gender non-conforming people in the future. But still, there is no hate crime legislation. South Africa is signatory to many international agreements. The African Charter on Human and People's Rights has Resolution 275, which protects sexual and gender diverse people in Africa. The African Charter on Children's Rights protects the safety of the child. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights upholds the inalienable human rights of every individual. And we have the Yogi Carta Principles Plus 10, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, the International Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights, the Convention on the Rights of the Child. All of these agreements need to be cited on the Prevention and Combating of Hate Crime and Hate Speech Bill, because they form the basis of much of our law reforms in South Africa. The United Nations also has independent experts on sexual orientation and gender identity issues. He constantly asks for input from organizations like ours to report on the state of sexual and gender minorities in our own countries. So far, we have submitted 2 reports to Victor Madrigal Borlos. We would like to send a report to Victor Madrigal Borlos to tell him that South Africa now has hate crime and hate speech legislation, and that sexual and gender minorities are now protected from bias and hatred. Passing this bill swiftly will show the international community that South Africa is committed to respecting the rights of the individual, and that South Africa is committed to eradicating discrimination and intolerance in their country. Hate speech legislation is also needed. Lesbians, gays, and transgender people are constantly subjected to offensive speech and also to hate speech. Remember that offensive speech is not hate speech. The Constitutional Court rightly found John Kwalani guilty of hate speech, and in doing so, they set out the specific definition for hate speech in South Africa. Hate speech goes much further than just being verbally offensive. Hate speech goes further than just expressing one's belief system. Hate speech goes further than the acceptable limits of free speech. Hate speech is closely related to hate crime because in most cases, hate speech precedes hate crimes and hate speech occurs during hate crimes. Hate speech is a barrier to inclusivity and social cohesion. Preventing hate speech will play a significant role in preventing hate crimes too. The public need to be educated about the definition of hate speech. It is evident from the amount of people that object to hate speech legislation that there is a lack of understanding on the definition of hate speech. The courts and SAPS need to be educated about the definition of hate speech, and they must be trained on the processes of prosecuting these cases. There is also a need for training on hate crimes, what constitutes hate crimes, and how to prosecute hate crimes. First responders are in desperate need of training on how to treat lesbians, gays, and transgender people with dignity. Two victims of hate crimes suffer secondary victimization at the hands of SAPS, medical personnel, shelters, and social workers. Even judges, magistrates, and court officials need to be educated regarding sexual and gender minorities and how to uphold LGBT human rights. The case that murdered, but the judge felt that the gay panic defense was acceptable. All of these incidents lead to a lack of reporting of hate crimes. Adequate education and training in these circumstances will require resources and funding, so it is concerning that there is no provision for the funding of this bill. Effective implementation. Prevention forms a part of this bill and arguably the most important part of this bill. Prevention means raising awareness, educating, and information sharing. It means that we don't have a bill that we lock away in a cupboard, but we actively go out and engage with the public on the importance of the bill. It means that we actively advocate for inclusion of all of us, for communities to support each other, for families that stay together and support their child, even if their child is gay. It means that all children will be able to go to school safely, even if they are gay or lesbian or transgender. It means that all people will have job security, even if they are gay or lesbian or transgender. And it means that the South African society that we live in will be united in simply respecting each other's differences. Effective implementation will require resources, expertise, and manpower. But there is no funding for this bill. And if we can prevent hate speech and hate crime, we will not need to prosecute hate crime nor hate speech. As responsible citizens in a democratic country, we welcome a bill that aims to prevent hatred and bias and discord amongst its people. We welcome a bill that aims to promote unity and respect for the dignity of others. We welcome a bill that combats violence based in discrimination. We welcome a bill that stops people from killing other people. We welcome a bill that encourages its citizens to simply live and let live. As a country whose history is marred by shameful discrimination, it is our duty to ensure that discrimination is never allowed to tarnish our future. Please pass the Prevention and Combating of Hate Crime and Hate Speech now. I thank you for this opportunity, and I'm now open to questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Litko. Thank you for the input. Members, are there any questions or comments? Honorable Yako.
Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you for the presentation. I just wanted to ask, you know, in respect of a lot of crime that happens to the queer community, is there any law that perhaps Semlaf Toti thinks should be a crime that is a law that is sponsored in a way that would combat the abuse and the killing besides this particular law that we're talking about now? Is there any way and direction that it would want South Africa, a stance it would want South African government to take in a way that would advocate for gay, lesbian, transgendered rights? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Yako. Are there any further questions or comments? None. Ms. Litko.
Thank you very much for your question. As it stands, the case of hate crime against LGBT people is extreme. Bearing in mind that we are a minority, it is really disgraceful that these crimes are still going on as we sit here and as we speak. So while there is other legislation that may be applied to these cases, we believe that the hate crimes bill and the hate speech bill will take it that one step further. We believe that by taking a strong stand against all forms of hatred, against lesbians, against gays, against transgender people, against intersex people, we believe that this will really finally start to get some form of justice for victims of hate crimes and victims of hate speech. And we believe that the key part of this bill will be the prevention part. This is what we are hoping for, where the government will step up and take ownership of creating real awareness of lesbians and gays, and that they will really set out to educate the public on just the fact that people are different, that being lesbian or gay is not something that is wrong, that being transgender or intersex is not something that is wrong. Already the World Health Organization has declassified being gay or lesbian as a mental illness. So that is no longer a mental illness, and it hasn't been so for many years. I think it was in 1990 that the World Health Organization declared that it wasn't a mental illness. And yet, today, as we sit here, there are so many people that feel it's an illness, it's a sickness, it's an evil, it's a something else. And they need to be educated. And the prevention part of this bill will go a far way to educate people. The same with being transgender or intersex. In 2018, the World Health Organization also made it that that being transgender essentially is not an illness. That all of these, the lesbian, gay, transgender, is merely a different type of expression of your sexual orientation, your gender identity, your gender expression, and diverse sex characteristics. So we have all of this information at hand, and we are frustrated as an organization in that we don't have the funds to reach out to the entire country with this information.
Ms. Lugo,
and so we feel that, I'll close. And so we just feel that the hate crimes and the hate speech bill will be very valuable and is very needed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Ms. Lithgow, for your presentation. It will be taken into account when the bill is being processed, when we deal with clause by clause, and responses will be given to some of the issues you have raised. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Mr. Romano, which other organization is ready to present?
Chair Scalabrini Center is on the platform.
Thank you very much. Are they ready?
Mr. Chapman, are you ready to present?
Scalabrini, are you ready to present? Do we have any other organization on the platform?
The ANC is also on the platform. Yeah.
The ANC Women's League, LGBTI plus Western Cape. Are you ready to present? The Cause for Justice, is it on the platform?
Chair, they are not yet on the platform. They said they're joining at 10:15.
Can you phone Scalabrini Center? Because they are on the platform.
They are on the platform, but they are not answering the phone. But let me try them again.
Okay.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning, to the chair. I just want to check where we are in the program and if we're good to start.
Which organization do you represent?
The ANC Women's League LGBTI desk.
You were supposed to have presented at 10:29.
Apologies about that, Chair.
Can you present?
All right, thank you very much. Good morning to the study group, and we are the ANC Women's League LGBTI desk.
This is not
I am Busisiwe Nomalo. I am
Ms. Nomalo, this is not a study group. This is a portfolio committee meeting.
Apologies about that. I am with Comrade Spogati Funda and Comrade Kabelo Kenibero. Over to you, Comrade Kenibero. I don't see Comrade Kenny Barrow in this meeting, but I'm just going to proceed on their behalf. So the African National Congress remains the only inclusive political party with the establishment of the ANC Women's League LGBTI desk in all provinces. The desk was established to entrench human rights culture in our society as laid down in the Constitution, especially in the Bill of Rights. We believe that post-apartheid transformation and the process of our society must involve the removal of the discrimination and prejudice in our society and the patriarchal heteronormative tendencies. We stand for freedom, equality, human dignity, non-discrimination, non-racialism, and non-sexism. We support this current bill in the forms of changing the following. Under the bill heading, would like to add to the words homophobia, biphobia, and protection against discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. The motivation for this is that there is the United Nations General Assembly and United Nations Human Rights Resolution on this matter. And there is also the motion that was posted on the 2nd of October in 2014, which South Africa was not in favor of. And there is also the dated of 15 July 2016 motion where South Africa abstained on this resolution. Would like to also make amendments under the preamble to add the increased killings of the hate crimes perpetuated against the LGBTI community. Would also like to add under the preamble the protection against violence of discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. Our motivations for this is that this gives a legal force and effect for the purpose of any legal constitution or public challenges to the sections of the bill once it's passed. It also foregrounds discrimination against the LGBTI community and political commitments to stop this. It also would align with all relevant international obligations of the LGBTI community and become part of the global movement against any form of discrimination. Under the definitions section, would also like to add a clear definition of LGBTIAQ+, as persons who identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, intersex, asexual, gender fluid and gender non-conforming or gender non-binary. Under the definition of violence, would also like to add violent act, which would mean physical and sexual, psychological, causing harm, injury, disability, or death. Under the definition, would like to add discrimination as defined by the Promotion of Equality and Prevention of Unfair Discrimination Act of 2000, or include the full definition of PEPUDA. I'm going to now hand over to Comrade Spogati to carry on.
Thank you so much. Chairperson, can you please confirm if I'm audible?
Yes, you are.
Thank you so much. My name, as stated, is Deborah Zifunda. I am going to be continuing on the proposals that we have, and that is continuing from the definitions that Mr. Stewart just started on. We would also like to add a definition of gender identity and sexuality based on Jungian Carter principles developed by 29 experts from 25 countries, which, although not yet an international treaty, is used by many countries, including South Africa. We would like sexual orientation to be understood to refer to each person's capacity for profound emotional affection and sexual attraction to and intimate sexual relations with individuals of different gender or the same gender or more than one gender. Secondly, gender identity to be understood to refer to each person's deeply felt internal and individual experience of gender, which may and may not correspond with the sex aligned at birth, including the person's sense of body, which may involve, if freely chosen, modification of body appearance or function by medical, surgical, or other means, and other expressions of gender, including dress, speech, and mannerism. Motivation. This gives a legal force and effect for the purposes of any legal, constitutional, or public challenges to the sections of the bill and act once passed. It displays an understanding of the LGBTQIA plus issues and moves away from the narrow definition of sexual orientation, which generally refers to whether a person is homosexual, heterosexual, or bisexual. It is important that all aspects of violence are defined and covered as hate crime. Important to show the link between discrimination and hate crime. Offense of hate crime and offense of hate speech. Replace sexual orientation with LGBTQIA status / identity, or leave out sexual orientation and add LGBTQIA plus status or identity. Should we add a clause under offense of hate crime along the lines that any violence perpetrated against persons based on their characteristic as listed in 31A to Q that is motivated by prejudice will be considered a hate crime offense? Motivation moves away from narrow definition of sexual orientation, which generally just refers to whether a person is homosexual, heterosexual, or bisexual. Penalties or orders. There should be an inclusion of specific statutory offenses, and especially offenses relating to direct violence against the LGBTQIA+ and femicide. We propose that a stipulation be added for offenses against the LGBTQIA plus persons in the Criminal Law Amendment Act of 105 of 1997. This would involve amending in Schedule 2, Part 1 to include corrective rape and corrective murder and gender-based violence, inclusive of rape or murder. If the perpetrator of such a killing is a first-time offender, is the penalty of a fine or a sentence not exceeding 3 years enough? Is the penalty of fine or imprisonment not exceeding 5 years enough? Do we need separate penalties or orders sections if the Criminal Procedures Act is going to be used? Prevention of hate crimes and hate speech. Should we add two clauses? That is, a clause on the Department of Social Development training of social workers and care workers on educating communities on available public services provided to prevent and combat hate crimes and hate speech. A clause encouraging civil society organizations in all their forms to work in a social compact with government on prevention and public awareness campaigns. The motivation thereof is social workers are often the core face working within communities and the first port of call of communities that experience domestic and gender-based violence. Given the limited resources of government and civil society, organizations should work in social compact to deal with these matters. We would also like to add that sensitization of government officials on issues of the LGBTQAI plus is very crucial because a large number of victims of hate crimes and hate speech are always, almost all the time, dismissed by different government officials, dismissed at health facilities, dismissed at police stations. And in our aims of protecting these very same individuals, it's important that we also capacitate government officials and everyone else who is in the position of working with victims of hate crimes and hate speech to be conscientized, capacitated to deal with these matters, and that they becomes means and ways of sort of I want to use punish, but I don't think punish is the word, but for there to be consequences of actions taken by government officials who are discriminating towards individuals who are victims of hate crimes and hate speech. Thank you. Bez, what's your name? I don't think they're back on. Should I continue?
Picking up on what Comrade Fogaz said, that all spheres of government.
You have 10 minutes
left.
Can you
hear me?
All right,
I'll continue. So strengthening the bill from what Fogaz has just outlined would like that all spheres of government, local and national, must work together with communities and community-based organizations to deal with the continued discriminations against the persons on the grounds expressed by clause 3 and 4 of the bill. Would also like to further that the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation should spearhead this process in ensuring a monitoring and evaluation strategies are implemented by the various forms of government and report back to Parliament on an annual basis. Would also like the Department of Sports and Culture to formulate policy guidelines in the form of social cohesion. Would also like that the ministry that is entrusted with basic education to train and upskill educators and teachers on hate crimes and hate speech as a prevention tool, should this also be integrated into the curricula. The Department of Basic Education should make sure sufficient resources are available to accomplish this. The minister should also assemble a team of experts designed to curricular changes to meet this. And the minister should be accountable to Parliament on social attitudes of the basic education on an annual basis. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are you now done?
Yes, we are, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments to the ANC Women's League? None. Thank you very much. Thank you for your presentation. It will be considered when we consider the bill as a whole. Thank you very much. Mr. Romano, which organization is ready now?
Mr. Chapman is not answering his phone. I've been trying to call him. But like I said, it's on the platform. I don't know if you just logged in and disappeared.
Beside him, is there any other organization that is ready?
I'm still trying to get hold of a triangle project, but I've not yet succeeded in getting this.
So we are left with Scala Brini Center, Triangle Project. Those are the two. The Cause for Justice, have they presented?
Not yet. They should be logging in at 4:15.
At 4:15.
Yes.
Can we take a 10 minutes break? We'll come at 4:15. I'll come back at 4:15. In the meantime, can you try and get hold of the other organizations, especially those that, because Scala Brini was supposed to have presented now, we can understand Triangle Project, and because they're supposed to start at 12:05, and Cause for Justice, also they are supposed to start at 11, but can you try and contact them and inform them that the program has been brought forward because other people have already presented, and they must advise us as to whether we must stick to the times communicated to them, or will they be prepared to come back to come forward?
Okay, so, yeah, but I think this Toza Mabe, who is, I think she's from Triangle Project. Maybe she can tell us if they are ready to present now.
Okay.
Good morning, Chair. We will be able to, I think, after the 10-minute break.
After the 10-minute break?
Yes, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Nigot Jaha.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Just to avoid this from happening again tomorrow, can the Secretariat please warn those who are presenting tomorrow to be present on the system so that they are ready? We don't know how long people take to present, but when they're ready, then we can just carry on with whoever's on the platform for tomorrow. So thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Seemingly, Scala Brini, is on the platform. Your hand is up, Mr. James Tubman.
Good morning, Chair. I just wanted to confirm that we are available to for the time slot of 10:25, but we are also able to anticipate and present earlier should the portfolio committee so wish.
So are you ready to present now?
We are indeed, Chairperson. Or after the 10-minute break, whichever you prefer.
No, we were taking the 10-minute break because there was no one to present. So if you are ready, let's proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson. Can I just share my slides?
Chair, Honourable Neo Druchen, can we have a 5 minutes break, please?
Okay. Can we have a 5 minutes break, which means let's come back at 10:15.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Can we proceed, Mr. Chapman? We have 20 minutes. Mr. Chapman?
Thank you, Chairperson. I will put forward my slides. I'm joined by Samantha Quartier, also from the Scalabrini Center, who will also be co-presenting. Good morning, everyone. So this is the Scalabrini Center of Cape Town's presentation for our submissions on the prevention and combating of hate crimes and hate speech bill, Bill 9 of 2018. The Scalabrini Center of Cape Town's vision is to foster cultural, social, and economic integration of migrants, refugees, and South Africans into local society and ensure dignity for people on the move. The center's focus is on welcoming migrants, protecting and promoting their rights and assisting with integration. In providing assistance through various programs, we advocate respect of human rights and the use of a holistic approach that considers all basic needs. So that's just an idea of who we are as an organization. I'm going to go through, mindful of the 20-minute time period that we have to talk, a brief introduction, talk to the key points from our submissions and current context, make a couple of concluding remarks, and then open up the floor for question and answer. All right. So firstly, there's a question that is often raised and has come up with, you know, is there really a need for hate crimes legislation, or is it not maybe provided for through the current criminal justice system, current legal framework. And then we have quite a number of points here. Firstly, internationally, hate crimes are considered priority crimes, not on the basis of perhaps their prevalence, but on the basis of their impact. Hate crimes result in severe emotional and psychological trauma beyond the individual victim and extend to the victim's group and society at large. Legislation addressing crimes that specifically target individuals is of absolute importance as a mechanism of fulfilling the obligations under the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination, CRD, and Section 9(3) of the Constitution. We at the Scalabrini Center have encountered numerous incidents wherein there's been hate speech and indeed hate crimes that have had far-reaching and severe emotional and psychological impacts. We've had incidents where individuals were asked for documentation and thrown off trains. We've had incidents where, on the basis of their migration status, we've seen recently in the news a Zimbabwean asked for his documentation and then stoned to death and burnt. I can't emphasize enough the importance of hate crimes and promulgating legislation to provide for and protect vulnerable communities, and in particular, given the reference point to the Scalabrini Center, refugees, asylum seekers, and people on the move, migrants in general. Hate crimes legislation also provides an opportunity to address the culture of impunity, institutionalized discrimination. Scalabrini Center was involved in fairly recently research that looked at the attitudes and perceptions of South Africans with respect to people on the move, migrants, and found that there is widespread xenophobic attitudes and views, regrettably, across all sectors,
And I think that the promulgation of this legislation, particularly if you look at Section 9, which talks to education and training and awareness raising with respect to what are hate crimes, what is hate speech, I think may go a long way to improve the situation and work towards social cohesion and improving perceptions and understandings of migrant communities within the country. Scalabrini Center of Cape Town is aware of numerous client examples of difficulty realizing justice under the current legal framework. Those assaulted and displaced and the family of those killed struggle to obtain justice. And there's no recognition of the xenophobic motivation for crimes committed. And I mean, like, for example, when we did some watching briefs and monitoring at police stations and found that by and large, there's no kind of provision or opportunity for recording of crimes as xenophobic. And often xenophobic violence is passed off as sort of generic crimes, and that loses sight of the impact and import of hate crimes in this particular context. The draft legislation offers a clear avenue and recourse for people on the move who are victims of hate crimes, who currently don't obtain justice to the degree to which they should be. I'm going to hand over to Samantha Cortia, and she's going to just...
Okay, good morning, everyone. I will be dealing with people on the move and why they should be protected by legislation. People on the move, which includes asylum seekers, migrants, and refugees. Who are they? A refugee is defined in our Refugee Act of 1908 as someone who fled the country on account of a well-founded fear of persecution based on enumerated grounds and or fled external aggression, occupation, foreign domination, or even seriously disturbing or disrupting public order. An asylum seeker is one who waits for their refugee status determination in the country, and the process of determination for who is a refugee in South Africa takes years, and sometimes over a decade, despite our legislation requiring finalization in 180 days. A migrant is defined by the International Organization for Migration, IOM, as any person who moves across an international border or within a state away from their habitual place of residence, regardless of their legal status, whether movement is voluntary or not, or the cause for movement and the length of stay. Okay, so Section 3.1 of B9 2018 provides that a hate crime is an offense under any law, the commission of which by a person is motivated by that person's prejudice or intolerance towards the victim of the crime in question because of one or more of the following characteristics or perceived characteristics of the victim or the victim's association with or support for a group of persons who share said characteristics. In support of the submissions made by the Hate Crimes Working Group, Scalabrini also strongly supports the inclusion of culture, language, nationality, and ethnic or social origin as characteristics that may constitute a hate crime, as founded in Section 3.1. The protection of these characteristics will establish a solid foundation for prosecution of crimes committed against perceived outsiders, both foreign nationals as well as South African citizens. We also submit that a 3.1K should include the term asylum seeker as well, just for completeness, as the Constitutional Court has recognized asylum seekers and refugees as a specific vulnerable group in Union of Refugee Women and Others B Director, as well as the Bula case. South Africa is a signatory to numerous international instruments, including the 1961 Refugee Convention and Protocols, as well as the 1969 OAU Refugee Convention, that binds the government to certain obligations, which includes the protection of vulnerable groups such as asylum seekers, refugees, and migrants. All persons in South Africa, regardless of their immigration status and protection by the Bill of Rights as founded in Chapter 2 of the Constitution, deserve protection. These rights are the foundation of a free and just democratic society, and with exception to the right to vote, apply to all persons in the Republic, irrespective of their legal status. The Supreme Court of Appeal has stated unequivocally that human rights has no nationality. It is inherent in all people, citizens and non-citizens alike, simply because they are human. And while that person happens to be in this country for whatever reason, it must be respected and protected as held by Section 10 of the Bill of Rights.
Now, I think it's really also important to take a look at the sort of current context, you know, and what has been happening. So if we look at the recently reported hate crime, hate speech incidents related to people on the move, there was, and it's been shared with us before, I'm sure, the advocacy brief published by the Hate Crimes Working Group, of which the Scalabrini Center is a member, and we were also a founding member. And it records a series of hate crimes throughout 2021 perpetrated against LGBTIQ community, perpetrated against migrants, refugees, asylum seekers throughout 2021. And it looks at the situation monthly, looking at assaults, deaths, displacement due to, as I say, among others, xenophobia. With several additional incidents of hate speech based on hatred or prejudice against people on the move. Now, if we look to ZenoWatch, which at the moment is doing a fairly good job at capturing at least those cases that are reported of xenophobia motivated incidents throughout January to December last year, 2021, we can see that there were 79 assaults and attacks, 130 incidents of shops being looted on the against that's migrant owned shops, 30 incidents of death due to xenophobia, 359 displacements of people. If we look more recently, in 2022, so this year, as of the 9th of May, 9th of this month, 36 incidents of xenophobia related assaults and incidents. There's also 6 deaths are reported, 8 shops looted, and a staggering 1,002 displacements of people on the move, displacements of migrants, people forced or removed from where they were staying or forced to flee. If we look at specific incidents, it's sometimes also good to just get an idea of the picture. I already mentioned this, the second one there, that there's a Melbourne man who was killed after after being stoned and then it was set alight in a mob attack in Deep Slut. And then additionally, there's the incident also in April this year in the Motobane village in Limpopo, wherein there was hate speech and a community gathering which ultimately resulted in the death of 2 foreign nationals who were attacked and beaten to death by the group from the community, taking the law into their own hands. I think that these kind of examples, just sort of as final comments, really paint a picture of the clear examples of hate crimes perpetrated against migrants, asylum seekers, refugees, people on the move. And it would be our submission and our plea that the bill is passed. Just other 2 other comments that are important. If we look at other sections of the bill, at the moment there isn't a mechanism, there isn't a provision, and I spoke about this earlier in the presentation, for reporting on hate crimes of xenophobic violence. And the reporting of crimes provided for by the bill in terms of Section 8 and the provision for education and training and awareness raising in terms of Section 9 of the bill are crucial. It's fundamental that records are kept and that the state is monitoring hate crimes and hate speech, including xenophobic hate crimes and hate speech. And it's also imperative for effective policing and justice. And then it's also, as I say, really crucial that there's an awareness in terms of Section 9 on what hate speech and
hate crimes are. We as the Scalability Center of Cape Town would support the passing the promulgation of the bill. Thank you for your time. We are available for any questions that, may arise.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Members, are there any questions or comments? No questions, no comments. Thank you very much, Mr. Chapman, for the presentation, and your other colleague from Scalability Center. Thank you very much. Your presentations will be taken into consideration when the bill is processed. When the deal is close by close, we'll take the issues that you have raised into consideration. Thank you very much. Thank you. Mr. Romano?
Chair, we can take cost for justice.
Cost for justice. Are you ready?
Yes, thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Can you load your slides? Can I
upload your slides? Yes, thank you, Chair. We'll do so.
You have 20 minutes to present.
Thank you so much, Chair. Honorable Chairperson, members of the committee and other distinguished people present in this meeting today, thank you for the opportunity to present to the committee. We know obviously that this bill has had a long history, starting, I suppose almost a decade ago, going through the department. And then obviously it had to wait for the Constitutional Court's judgment in the Quelani case. Today we would like to focus on a couple of specific matters that are contained in our oral submissions that was delivered to the committee in 2019 already. And we will also touch on certain relevant points as it relates to the Quelani judgment. So I just set out there the content that we would like to cover. It is in a sort of a priority list, so hopefully we get to everything in 20 minutes, but we'll see how we go. To start off with then, just a quick background on our organization. My name is Ryan Smith. I'm the Executive Director and Legal Counsel of Cause for Justice. And the organization is basically, its mandate is determined by five core values, which is listed there on your screen: responsible exercise of freedom, promotion of human dignity or the inherent worth of all human beings, the protection of the vulnerable in our society, which is sometimes referred to as social justice, the protection of the family against destructive outside and inside forces, and fifthly, ensuring accountable exercise of government power. To jump then into our first point, and it's a reference to Clause 4.2 of the bill, which contains certain exemptions to the crime of hate speech. And obviously these weren't contained in the initial draft, and it was still within the department, and we're grateful and thankful that our submissions regarding exemptions were accepted and included in the bill. But then, interestingly enough, there are four exemptions, and we see that, you know, the clear purpose is to provide protection from criminal prosecution for bona fide expressions, and then in four instances where there's artistic, literary, let's say merit to it, where there's academic or scientific merit, that's the second one, whether it's on a matter of public interest or part of reporting or providing commentary. And the fourth one is part of religious or conscientious engagement. What we find concerning in this regard is when it comes to clauses 4.2a and d, there's specific provisos included in the bill. So on my next slide, we look specifically at these provisos. So in relation to clause 4.2a, it then says the the party that's sort of facing an accusation will not be found guilty of hate speech to the extent that such creativity, performance, or expression does not advocate hatred that constitutes incitement to cause harm based on one or more of the grounds referred to in subsection 41A. So we say that this proviso basically renders the envisaged protection worthless and of no effect. I'm going to wrap that up when I go to the second one, which is reference to clause 42D, which also contains a proviso which says, to the extent that such interpretation and proselytization does not advocate hatred that constitutes incitement to cause harm based on one or more of the grounds referred to in subsection 41A. And just to explain this in very basic language, is what we see is that clause 41A contains a definition of the crime of hate speech. Clause 42 contains certain exemptions that will basically nullify criminal liability. But what happens when you include the proviso, you're saying that in the case that this bona fide interpretation or proselytization, or in the case of A, whether this bona fide creativity or performance, if that constitutes hate speech, then there's no exemption. So this is what we call a circular reference or a circular argument to say that it's not hate speech unless there is a exemption that applies, but the exemption will not apply unless it's hate speech. So we're saying that this basically is something that is of no worth and has no effect unless we delete those two provisos. So this will be our proposal in respect of clause 42A and 42D, which would be to delete those provisos, because as we see, those provisos are not included in clauses 42B and C. That relates to academic and scientific meritorious expression, as well as C, which refers to, sorry for jumping around there, which refers to commentary in the public interest. So that's our first point around removal of that circular reference that makes the exemptions of no force and effect. Our second point is regarding the definition of harm. And the definition of harm includes references to emotional and psychological, physical, economic, and then also social harm. But this term social harm, even in academic circles, it's still an emerging concept and it's highly contentious even in those circles. So we're saying that it carries a real risk of rendering a person criminally liable for ambiguous or unverifiable or unmeasurable alleged subjective experiences of consequences of supposed victims. When we look at the judgment of the Constitutional Court in Quilani, they inserted or had a definition of harmful that they used for purposes of that judgment. And of course, it was in the context of hate speech, admittedly in the Equality Act. But they said harmful can be understood as emotional and psychological harm that severely undermines the dignity of the targeted group, as well as physical harm. So our proposal to address the risk of unjustifiable infringement on freedom of expression would be either delete the reference to social harm from the definition of harm in clause one, or alternatively insert a definition of what social harm means. Right, so that will be our second submission. Then coming to our third submission, it's on clause 41A of the bill, which contains the first element of, you will see on the screen, Roman numeral one, that is advocacy or some or other speech that demonstrates a clear intention to be harmful or incite harm. And the second element is to promote or propagate hatred. So the use of the word or is also referred to in legal circles as a disjunctive, and the use of and as a conjunctive. So or would say that if you meet either of the two, you would fall foul of the legislation and you will fall within criminal liability. The use of and then means that you have to, both elements have to be present in order for you to qualify for the crime. Again, in the Quilani judgment, the Constitutional Court confirmed that the reading of the definition of hate speech as it is in Section 10 of the Equality Act, it must be read conjunctively. They had the Constitutional Court in that case had the benefit that in Section 10(1) of the Equality Act, that definition of hate speech does not contain either the word or and. So it was open to them to interpret that section in line with the Constitution, either as disjunctively or conjunctively. But they concluded that it must be read conjunctively, otherwise there will be certain consequences that are unintended, and we will actually catch people in the definition of hate speech, a crime of hate speech that only requires it to be harmful. So even if there's no promotion or propagating of hatred. Our proposal then, in order to bring this section or this portion of Clause 41A in line with the Constitution, would then be to remove the reference to or and replace it with and. That's going to be in line with the Constitutional Court's judgment in the Quilani matter. I move on to our fourth point, which is a reference to incite harm. We know that our starting point when it comes to hate speech is Section 16(2)(c) of the Constitution. I've included a reference to our written submissions where we address this point. So the Constitution requires that hateful expression should incite harm in order for it to fall within the definition of hate speech. So when objectively observed from the outside, the expression will motivate others to perpetrate harm on intended victims or target groups. Then I think what is also clear from the Quilani judgment is that the harmfulness or not of speech is irrelevant for purposes of hate speech. What is required is the incitement of others to cause harm. For that reason, we say that Clause 41A, Roman numeral 1, should only refer to inciting harm and not to the alternative, which is to be harmful. So basically, when all of that is taken together, we're proposing that Clause 41A should read as follows. So one would be the removal of be harmful, or two, so that it will only be the element of incite harm, as we also see it in Section 16(2)(c) of the Constitution, and then the second element, which is to promote or propagate hatred. Then I think this will be our final really detailed point. We've got some ad hoc points at the end of the slide deck, but this will be the last one, I think, of real substance. And so if we look at the protected grounds or characteristics included in Clauses 3 and 4 of the Bill, I again include a reference to where in our written submissions we address this point. So there are various characteristics that are listed in Clause 3.1. There are 23 of them, and then there are also 19 listed in Clause 4.1. So the list for a hate crime is longer than the list for hate speech. So one of the questions we put to the department in 2017, when we were still busy with their process internally, is why do these two lists differ? That was our first question. So I want to move on to just a graph we included in our submissions. It looks a little convoluted, but I think the value lies in the colored columns. And that's where we're saying where there's strong agreement around what should be the grounds for hate speech, that's obviously what we find both in the Constitution as well as in Section 16(2) and 9(3) of the Constitution, the non-discrimination, as well as the PUDA and the Bill. Okay, so there's only those four grounds. Then we look to the yellow column, where there's less strong agreement about which characteristics or grounds should be, you know, form the basis of a hate speech crime. There we've got basically overlap between the bill and Section 9.3 and PEPFUDA. And then there are these last two columns. The orange column refers to new grounds that are inserted into the bill for the first time, for which we don't have some or other reference in existing legislation or in the Constitution. This typically then is what will limit freedom of expression, and for which there should be proper justification. It must be reasonable and justifiable in an open and democratic society based on equality, human dignity, and freedom. This is the mantra of Section 36 of the Constitution, our limitations clause. And then we see in the red column, for some other reason, some of the non-discrimination grounds in, that we find in Section 9.3 of the Constitution, as well as in the Equality Act in PEPFUDA, has not been included in this specific bill. All right, so just to wrap that up, we another question we put to the Parliament Department basically in 2017 was, why were the four grounds in the red column not included in the bill? Also, what is the justification for including the new grounds? Another question is, what has changed since 1996? We knew that the Constitutional Assembly, when considering which grounds to include in Section 16.2c, that is the Constitution's definition of hate speech, they knew of all the grounds for non-discrimination in Section 9.3 and still decided to only include four grounds. So clearly there must have been some development in the last 26 years or so justifying expanding the grounds in hate speech. So this will be part of the... Excuse me, Chair. Thank you, Chair. So I mentioned there in that second bullet, we asked these questions of the department, obviously to test whether they can pass muster in terms of Section 36 of the Constitution. But we've had no responses over the last, I think it's now five years. And our proposal would then be remove the grounds that are not supported by either Section 16.2c, that is, of the Constitution, or Section 9.3, which is the non-discrimination clause, or by the Equality Act. And then secondly, to include those grounds that appear in Section 9.3 and in the Equality Act, but which have been excluded from the bill. Those, that's the four grounds in the red column. That is pregnancy, marital status, conscience, and belief. So our request to the committee will be, to the extent that this has not been something that the department has been interrogated on, that the committee should do that, for the department to present those justifications and motivations for expanding the grounds for hate speech. I think we're going then into sort of our ad hoc points. We just also note, and this is also available in our written submissions, the things that we support. We support that the bill requires an informed intention to communicate hate speech, which is then basically a narrowing down of the crime. Then also narrowing it down of the definition of communication, which is in clause one of the bill. And also we saw from the Quilani judgment of the Constitutional Court again that hate speech should only apply to public communications and not also private communications. Then also we support the deletion of the crimes of incitement, attempts, and conspiracy in respect of hate crimes. That's clause three of the bill. And then obviously we support the inclusion of reasonable exemptions from criminal liability for hate speech. This is my final slide, just a reference to some ad hoc matters that we also cover in our written submissions. It also contains some drafting proposals. And finally, I would just like to comment, you see the very last bullet on my slide is that within our ranks, one of our directors is one of a handful of trainers who train government drafters and legal representatives who actually do drafting within the government department. So Professor Malerbe, some of you might know his name and know of him, but he presents a legislative drafting course once every 6 months. Currently, I think it runs through UCT, but we have capacity to the extent that there is a need to confer with someone within civil society, like ourselves or others, in respect of where specific clauses should end up and what the wording should be for it to pass constitutional muster, but also for it not to to have, you know, unintended consequences that we always try to avoid. That chair is our submissions, and we're happy to leave it there and open for questions from the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Smith. Are there any questions to Mr. Smith? Let me start with Honorable Swart.
No, thank you, Chair, and thank you for the input. I'd like to focus in on the exemptions and the concern that is raised by Mr. Smith about it being self-defeating, and that is under Section 4.2, and the difference between A, B, C, and D with the provisors, and I'm sure the department will want to comment on that at a later stage. But what is interesting is that 4.2C, which refers to the exemption for fair and accurate reporting of comment in the public interest, refers specifically to the provisor in accordance with Section 16.1, which then would imply that Section 16.2 of the Constitution, which limits the right of freedom of expression to the incitement of imminent violence or C, advocacy of hatred based on the foregrounds. So I'd like you to expand further on your concerns about the self-defeating purposes of 4.2a and 4.2d, and given your legislative capacity, would you consider rephrasing or submitting a proposal to the committee to tie up the proviso to bring it in line with what one is understood to be the purpose, which is the limitation clause of Section 16.2 of the Constitution, read with the Kulani judgment? Thank you so much.
Yes. Thank you, Honorable Swart. I think to start off by answering the second part of your question, that within our written submissions, we have already included drafting proposals in respect of curing what we see as unconstitutionality within clauses 4.2a and d. So there would be references within our current written submissions that the committee would have had sight of or could have had sight of that would answer that. So in terms of specific drafting proposals. And then to come back to your broader question, obviously the aim would be with an exemption. So Section 4.2, the broad aim would be to say is that, yes, you might fall within the definition of hate speech as now included in Section 4.1 of or Clause 4.1 of the bill. And to what extent can we provide an exemption? Now, if I first refer to Clause 4.2 B and C, in B we find a reference, and if I read it as a whole, it would say the provisions of subsection 1, that is the definition of a hate speech crime, do not apply in respect of anything done as contemplated in subsection 1. If it is done, the first element is in good faith. And then the second element is in the course of engagement in, if we take B now as an example, in the course of engagement in any academic or scientific inquiry right? And there, that is where the exemption stops. We've got no reference to some or other proviso starting with to the extent that and so forth. The same applies to C, where there's a reference to fair and accurate reporting or commentary in the public interest or in the publication of any information, commentary, advertisement, or notice in accordance with Section 16(1) of the Constitution. Obviously, that is the sort of the definition of freedom of speech, the right. So there's also no proviso that flows from it. But in the case of A and D, we find that when it comes to artistic creativity, performance, or other form of expression, and in cases of D, the bona fide interpretation and proselytizing or espousing of any religious tenet, belief, teaching, doctrine, or writings, then we find there's a proviso. Now, if you read that as a whole, it suggests that academic and scientific inquiry, as well as fair and accurate reporting in the public interest, it seems like these are higher values, because in those cases, there are no proviso. So that would be my first answer, and I would like to understand from the department side why they are creating this hierarchy. Because if you look at artistic creativity, which is also something that is a bedrock of expression, if I look at section 16(1)(c) of the Constitution, it says everyone has the right to freedom of expression, which includes freedom of artistic creativity. So this is something that's acknowledged in our constitutional democracy as a value. And the same applies to D, when we speak about the bona fide interpretation, proselytizing or espousing of a religious tenet, belief, teaching, and doctrine and writing. We've got a whole section in the Constitution, section 15 of the Constitution, that deals on the value of this kind of expression in our constitutional order. We find it strange that there would be a proviso to these things that have specific grounding in the Constitution, in the Bill of Rights itself, to basically water down the exemption. From our point of view, it's difficult to see how the provisos, so that portion following to the extent that in both subclauses A and D, we find it difficult to imagine how those provisos would not completely remove the exemption. There might be some or other difference between what is in the definition of hate speech in clause 4(1) in the bill and what is in section 16(2)(c) of the Constitution. But it is concerning without understanding the reasons behind it. Again, this is a question for the department. Why would we subvert these two elements of expression, which have a grounding in the Bill of Rights, and in the other two cases, academic and scientific inquiry and fair and accurate reporting? We don't see this subversion, if I can call it that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Duclair.
Mr. Chase, thank you once again for allowing me to speak and raise a question. I would just like to ask Mr. Smith, when the Constitutional Court in the Kualani judgment extended the list, I'm going to ask two questions. When the Constitutional Court extended the list because they included actually reference to persons who are gay, in section 16. Did they legislate or did they not? And the second part of my question relates, maybe I should leave it at that. Chair, let me ask it. Is section 16(2) the alpha and the omega, or is there still a section 36 that you have to comply with if you extend those lists? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dupre.
Thank you, Honourable Dupre, for those two questions. So regarding your first question, in the case of Kualani, we had an exceptional element to the extent that the Constitutional Court found that the discrimination that was, the hate speech that was complained of, although it didn't figure within the prohibited grounds in terms of Section 16.2c of the Constitution, which only contains four grounds. What is provided for in the Equality Act, and of course that case was a hate speech violation or alleged violation in terms of the Equality Act, there's also what is called analogous grounds. So the Constitutional Court found that this is a ground which, because there's a violation of human dignity and there are some other elements that we find in the definition of prohibited grounds in Section 1 of FEPUDA, that made it legitimate for the Constitutional Court to find the journalist Kwelane guilty of hate speech in terms of the Equality Act. Your question around whether the court had legislated by then going further and including sexual orientation as a ground for hate speech, I would answer yes, the court had done so. If you look at the judgment itself of the Constitutional Court in Kwelane, the justification they provide for including sexual orientation as a further ground for hate speech, the total length of their justification is two paragraphs. In my view, and it's not for me to criticize the highest court in the land, but I would have liked to see more than two short paragraphs justifying or motivating, giving a reason for why they are extending the grounds for hate speech in terms of the Equality Act. Then quickly to touch on your second question, you asked about whether Section 16.2 is the be-all and end-all. Obviously, Section 16.2c contains a limitation on freedom of expression. That is an internal limitation on freedom of expression contained in that section itself, but Section 36 will always apply. So to the extent that Parliament creates a law of general application that goes further than Section 16.2c, then Parliament, and you know, when it comes to a court challenge at some point, will have to then justify going further than Section 16.2c. So the short answer is, if a Bill of Parliament does not go further than Section 16.2c in limiting expression, it will still pass constitutional muster. If it goes beyond the internal limitation of Section 16.2c in the Bill of Rights, then Parliament would need to be able to justify that further limitation in terms of Section 36 of the Bill of Rights.
Thank you very much, Mr. Smith. Are there any further questions or comments? None. Thank you very much for your input.
Thank you, Chairperson.
It will be included and be considered when we deal with the bill as a whole. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Mr. Romano?
Yes, Chair. We have Triangle Project.
Yes. Are they ready?
They should be, Chair.
Mr. Njobe, welcome.
Thanks, Chair. Just trying to put my camera on. There we go. Thank you very much for this opportunity to present to you. I am representing Triangle Project as well as Women's Legal Center. Triangle Project is a nonprofit human rights organization offering professional services to ensure full realization of constitutional and human rights for LGBTI persons, and has been offering a range of services, including court support for survivors of hate crimes. Women's Legal Center is an African feminist legal center that advances women's rights through strategic litigation, advocacy, education, and training. And the center has a vision of women in South Africa who enjoy equal and substantive access to their rights. The presentation will be focusing on the preamble, the definitions, section 3 to 7, as well as the financial implications. Chair, while this legislation is in progress, an alarming and shocking number of new reports about hate crimes and hate speech against women and LGBTI people reach us via the media at an alarming rate. Discrimination, violence, human rights violations, and criminalization targeting LGBTI people in South Africa continue to have a severe and shameful impact. These reports that reach us are but the tip of the iceberg and do not reflect the true prevalence and the impact of hate crimes and hate speech against LGBTI communities in South Africa, who are facing a crisis of fear, despite the promise of the Constitution. We note the preamble of the bill refers to only two South African international human rights commitments, that's the Durban Declaration of 2001, as well as CERD. While we welcome the state's action to make good on these international commitments, we submit that there are many other international instruments that are applicable in the context of the state's obligation to advance and ensure equality and elimination of discrimination. We therefore submit the preamble of the bill needs to include and set the foundational framework of the legislation contained within to include and reflect the intersectional nature of discrimination and prejudice that fuel hate crimes and hate speech against women and LGBTI people. We therefore strongly recommend that all these instruments are included, including the Yogyakarta Principle Plus 10, which is the international best principle on human rights for LGBTI people. So Triangle Project and Women's Legal Center wishes also to point out that the bill in its current form is very binary and therefore not inclusive and representative of the people of South Africa. The use of only the binary pronouns his or her throughout the bill is exclusionary. The bill must recognize the diverse identities in South Africa. And therefore we recommend gender neutral pronouns, they, them, their, to replace his or her wherever this appears on the bill. We also note the inclusion of the definition of intersex in the bill. However, we also note that there are no other definitions of any of the other listed characteristics and grounds in section 3.1 and 4.1. In these circumstances, we submit the definition of intersex should be removed from the definitions of the bill. The scientific, academic, and social understanding of diverse sex characteristics is constantly evolving, and we're concerned that including a definition of intersex in the bill to the exclusion of other characteristics and grounds will shackle the legal interpretation of this term to an understanding that may not be adequate to protect intersex people over time. If the committee elects to retain the definition of intersex, we submit that all the listed characteristics and grounds in section 3 and 4 should be properly defined. In this case, the most up-to-date definitions, as referred by Intersex Community of South Africa, ISSA, itself must be used instead. The existing definition must be replaced, for example, by definition of intersex as an umbrella term used to describe a wide range of natural bodily variations in sex characteristics from birth. Intersex people are born with sex characteristics, including genitals, gonads, and chromosome patterns that are more diverse than binary notions of male and female bodies. Such variations may involve diversity in genitalia, hormonal differences, or combinations of chromosomal genotype and sexual phenotype other than XY and XX. Some intersex traits are visible at birth, while others are not apparent until puberty. Some chromosomal intersex variations may not be physically apparent at all. So should the committee choose to define all the listed characteristics, we would then propose that LGBTI inclusive definitions of SOGIESQ terms should be included. That includes gender identity, gender expression, sex characteristics, as well as sexual orientation, which is defined in our previous submission. We have a grave concern at the lack of clarity in the bill about the true meaning of harm. The definition is ambiguous and potentially problematic in light of the judgment handed down by the Crown Court in the case of Golani, where in respect of speech in particular, the court found that Section 10(1) of the Equality Act is inconsistent with Section 1C and 16 of the Constitution,
and thus unconstitutional and invalid to the extent that it includes the word harmful in the prohibition against speech. Similarly, it may be argued that any emotional, psychological, physical, social, or economic harm as currently contained in the bill is too broad. As pointed out by the Concord in Gwelani, the test for hate speech is an objective one to determine whether the intentions were to be harmful or to incite harm and to promote or propagate hatred. We're also concerned that the definition relies on the discretion of the judicial officer in interpreting whether harm in effect took place without any guidance in respect of the definition and the meaning of harm. It is important to include the definition to guide ordinary South Africans on the concept and the meanings of this term. It is most unhelpful for an individual to respond to a question of what is a hate crime, for example, by saying that it has the meaning ascribed to Section 391 of the Act. This renders the offense in the ordinary understanding and discourse to be meaningless. We propose the inclusion of the definition for the term associates in the section of the bill. The term associates or variations of it appears several times in the bill, alongside family members, and we submit the term associates should instead be used throughout the bill and be defined inclusively to include not only family members, but all persons who have a close connection to the victim. We recommend the addition of or their associates in Section 3.1, and we also recommend the following. Section 3.1H, the addition of or gender expression, 3.1I, or any other medical diagnosis, 3.1K, asylum seeker, 3.1P, sex and sex characteristics, which include intersex or. We also recommend the addition of the following sections. Section 1R, 3.1R, marginalized socioeconomic status, S, vulnerable and criminalized professions such as sex work, T, personal appearance, U, current or past incarceration or detention in either a correctional facility or psychiatric facility, and V, any other grounds, either perceived or real. Further, it is necessary to add gender expression, asylum seeker, and sex characteristics to the listed characteristics and grounds throughout the bill to properly complete the list according to the objects of the bill. In this regard, we are also concerned about hate crimes against unhoused or commonly known as homeless people, people who use drugs, and those with health statuses that do not relate to HIV, for example, TB or COVID-19 at the moment. It is trite that these far too often marginalized persons are exceptionally vulnerable to prejudice, deprivation and abuse, sometimes by state actors. And many of the clients that we assist through our various programs inform the position that more is required in respect of recognizing the rights of persons who too often are rendered invisible in our society and who suffer stigma and prejudice as a result. With respect to hate speech, we recommend 4.1I to be harmful or to incite harm and instead of or, and HH to include gender expression, asylum seeker and sex characteristics, which include intersex, as said in the previous slide. We also recommend that the committee should include the following sections, which do not currently appear on the bill. 4.1LL, occupation or trade, and 4.1MM, political affiliation or conviction. In our experience, victim impact statements are critical in criminal court proceedings. It's a way for the victim's voice to be heard in proceedings, for the court to fully understand and appreciate the destruction and long-term consequences that a hate crime or hate speech wreak on a victim's life. Therefore, we propose Section 1 and 2 of the bill. For the purpose of this section, a victim impact statement means a sworn statement or affirmation by one or more of the following persons. One, the victim. Two, someone authorized by the victim to make such statement on behalf of the victim. Three, in the event of a victim's death, the victim's associates. And four, an organization or institution with expert knowledge or experience of the group to which the victim belongs or is perceived to belong, which contains the physical, psychological, social, economic, or any other consequences of the offense for the victim and their associates.
And also 5.2, the prosecutor must, when adducing evidence of or addressing the court on sentence in respect of the offence under this Act, consider the interests of a victim of the offence and the impact of the offence on the victim, and furnish the court with a victim impact statement provided for in subsection 1. We strongly submit that prosecutors in hate crimes and hate speech cases should have a legal obligation to look beyond the victim and their associates alone and deliberately seek out expert input, evidence, and opinions that can assist the court in understanding the full impact of the hate speech or hate crimes on the broader LGBTI communities. As I've learned by Prof. Nell Ngwelane, Triangle Project has acted in this capacity in hate crimes matters, and not at the invitation of the state, only afterwards. In the criminal trial of Zoliso Ngonyane, a 19-year-old lesbian who was murdered, we consistently put pressure on the judicial system and took to the stand to provide evidence for sentencing. In addition to 5.2, there appears to predicate on the mandatory nature of the VIS by stating that prosecutors must consider the impact on victims, but may only provide VISs where it is practicable. This is unacceptable due to the importance of a VIS in sentencing. We believe it is non-negotiable that a VIS must be obtained on all hate crime and hate speech cases. We suggest that this be remedied by adding a new subsection that directs prosecutors in cases where it is truly impossible to obtain such a statement to provide the court with written reasons to explain why it was impossible to obtain a VIS and outlining their efforts to do so. And that will be section 2A, where it is not possible to obtain a victim impact statement for in subsection 1, the prosecutor must provide the court with written reasons for the absence of such a statement by either the victim, their associates, or an organization or institution with expert knowledge or experience of the group to which the victim belongs or is perceived to belong. Section 6 on penalties and orders. We know that South Africa is lauded for its efforts in reconciliation and transformation post the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. And for that reason, we support the Restorative Justice Center submission in 2018. The heightened severity of punishment and additional criminalization of hate-motivated perpetrators do not on their own repair the harms caused by hate speech or hate crime. And elevating the penalties for hate crime and hate speech will not challenge the underlying causes of this prejudice. Diversion is already part of South African law relating to accused persons who are children, as outlined in the Child Justice Act of 2008, as well as the Probation Services Act of 1991. We share the view of the Restorative Justice Center that the system is well enough developed and capable of delivering a range of therapeutic and didactic programs and victim offender mediation at both pre-trial and pre-sentence level. We submit that the same mechanisms should be available in hate crimes and hate speech matters, but strictly with the free and informed consent of victims or their associates, and only in cases where no minimum sentence is applicable. With respect to directives, we submit that this section should include the same obligations on SAPs in the form of national instructions and standing orders, including training, especially because there's no express mention of SAPs under the general implementation provisions in Section 8. So the proposed change is that these directives should be issued within 90 days of the commencement of the Act. The role that SAPs will play in implementing this bill, Chair, is of paramount importance. They will be first responders, and there is ample evidence to show that SAPs officers do not always treat LGBTI persons with respect and due regard for their rights, equality, and dignity. Many victims have reposted secondary victimization by SAPs, and Triangle Project has embarked on training SAPs so they're able to identify the markers of hate crimes and to be sensitive to not further discriminate on victims and ask offensive and intrusive questions about their identities. And when engaging communities, it was also conclusive that there's a need for a mandatory private room when reporting hate crimes in all police stations. Therefore, we recommend, two, that the National Commissioner of South African Police Services must after consultation with the National Director of Public Prosecutions, Director General Justice and Constitutional Development, issue national instructions and standing orders within 90 days of the commencement of the Act regarding all matters which are reasonably necessary or expedient to be provided for and which must be complied with by all members of SAPS who are tasked with the opening of dockets and investigation of cases relating to hate crimes and hate speech in order to achieve the objects of this Act, including the following: the manner in which cases
related to 5 minutes.
Thanks, Chair. The manner in which hate crimes and hate speech are dealt with, the circumstances in which the charge in respect of such an offence may be withdrawn, and the docket closed, and section 2 on the collection of relevant evidence. On prevention, there is an allocation of two Chapter 9 institutions, and we'd to make the public aware of the prohibition of hate crimes and hate speech, and this general duty is unspecified and is vague and does not create accountability to these specific institutions. And merely creating awareness on this bill and what it criminalizes will not prevent hate crime. And secondly, in section 9.2, it places a duty on the president to designate certain executive departments. We iterate that while we do not object to the president choosing responsible departments, we strongly submit that that should be done now. And financial implications, we are compelled to reject the assertion that in the explanatory memorandum of the bill, that existing budgets will be used where no additional funding is sought to implement this bill. When a victim and other witnesses have to provide victim impact statements, for example, there's a need for these people to travel from home to court. How will this happen without allocated funds? In the climate of austerity and departmental budget cuts, we fail to see how this law will be properly implemented within existing executive budgets. Finally, Chair, if you'll allow me, these are the faces of the people we represent. These are only known cases in 2019. For a period of 9 months, Andile, who was 41, a queer person found dead and mutilated and burnt in Nobohle. Anele, 28-year-old, who was stabbed and mutilated, also in Gwanobohle on the 13th of June last year. Bonang was a 29-year-old lesbian, stabbed in the neck to death. Sam, body was discovered burnt outside a car in Klipgat in the northwest. Aubrey, 48-year-old gay man who was stabbed to death outside his house in Johannesburg. And who can forget Lonaba Jack, 22-year-old queer person found stabbed to death on a pavement in Nyanga. Pelogazi, 24-year-old, stabbed to death after rejecting a man's sexual advances. And Dimagadzo, 29-year-old, shot to death in Durban. Zimasile, 35-year-old gay man, stabbed to death. Pamanda, 34-year-old gay man, stabbed to death, slit in the throat. Tapelo, 23-year-old queer person who dies in a hospital after an assault. And Nathaniel, who was stabbed in the chest in Van der Vale Park. These are only 12 cases of the 47 cases that have been reported to LGBTI organizations that work on hate crimes in South Africa within only a 9-month period. We must remember that while hate crimes are a message, a crime to a whole community, that certain people will not be tolerated, this bill is a message to perpetrators that hate crimes will not be tolerated. And this message is long overdue. I'd like to thank you very much for allowing me to present on our submission. I'd also like to hand over now to my colleague, Charlene May, who's an attorney at Women's Legal Center, Sharon Cox, the hate crimes manager at Triangle Project, and Estian Smith, the research advocacy and policy manager, for questions and any questions or concerns. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Members, are there any questions or comments? We have Mr. Dupree.
No, Chair, except that I like how passionately they made the presentation. It was a very passionate presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nola. Mr. Dupree?
Mr. Chair, thank you. And once again, I express my appreciation towards you for allowing me to be active in this forum, because strictly speaking and traditionally speaking, it's not my role to ask questions. Chair, and those last few slides just brought back how cruel the world can be. But my work is to ask the hard questions and do the hard yards. And I'm going to ask, maybe let me just ask one question. We refer to HIV status in the list. My question is short and simple. Should we extend it to TB or should we extend it to any other illness or sickness or whatever that poses a threat to members of the public? And what I've got in mind is, should one go in the direction of even persons who have not been vaccinated against COVID, and is that going to present a problem in future? That is what I'm thinking about at this stage, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dupree. Is that the only question you have?
Chair, yes. Depending on the answer that I receive, I might have a follow-up. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Over to you, Ms. Njaba.
Chair, I'll be handing over to my colleagues to answer this question. Thanks.
Hi, Chairperson, members of the committee. It is Charlene May from the Women's Legal Centre. I think I'm going to have a first crack at Mr. Dupree's question, and then perhaps my colleagues from the Triangle Project can add, certainly they would be able to speak much more from a lived experience perspective of the communities that they serve. I think that in part your question refers back to something that Dr. Cruiser dealt with very early on this morning when she talked about how the listed grounds were not necessarily. There were listed grounds in Section 9, and then there's the listed grounds for in Papuda as well, and that this bill seeks to have its own listed grounds. But that those grounds are not necessarily exhausted. I think that at the end of Tazama's presentation clearly illustrates to us humanity's level of our ability for hatred. And cruelty towards each other. And so I think that we accept that it's difficult for us and for you as legislators to sit in those chairs and those positions to be able to say, how cruel can people really be to each other and what new forms of discrimination can we as people in humanity come up with? And how do we legislate that and ensure that we don't lose anyone or exclude anyone from the protection that they have under the Constitution. And so when we talk about your example or your question refer to HIV status, I think HIV status, people living with HIV and AIDS is particularly vulnerable within South African society and within the communities that the WLC and Triangle serves. And so it's an important distinction. I think, which is why we would agree with the inclusion of it, but also why we're asking for possible extension of some of these grounds. We, for instance, know that women who access abortion services suffer great stigma in this country and do live in fear of physical, emotional, psychological reprisals within their communities, and so is often afraid to talk about the fact that they've accessed those abortion services. And so I think where it's important for us to have listed grounds, I also think that it's important for us to make it very clear that those listed grounds are not necessarily, it's not a closed list, and that we recognize, once again, as I said, society's ability to come up with new ways of discrimination and forms of hatred. And so I just wanted to add that to the point that you're making, and hope to some extent I've answered the question. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Dutte.
Chair, once again, thank you for indulging me. And that is precisely the conundrum that you as a committee are going to face, is it's the principle of legality, irrespective of the answer that we received earlier this morning. We cannot have an open-ended list. That is the bottom line. And at this stage, I know I'm premature in that because we haven't received our final approval for our responses. But at this stage, personally, that is the bottom line for me. And that's the problem that this committee is going to face with this bill, is where will the committee draw the line? That we cannot have an open-ended list. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dupre. That brings us to the end of today's public hearings. We will continue tomorrow. Mr. Romano, what time are we meeting tomorrow? Is it still 8:30?
Yes, Chief.
So we are proceeding tomorrow 8:30, and tomorrow it will be the last day of our public hearings. So no other organization will be allowed to present after we have closed the public hearings tomorrow. So tomorrow will be proceeding with 6 organizations who will make presentations. Can you fly to the organizations, Mr. Romano? Yes, it's African Policing Civilian Oversight Forum, Media Monitoring Africa, Consortium for Refugees and Migrants in South Africa, Association of Christian Media, Campaign for Free Expression, and the last organization to make a presentation will be AfriForum. So those are the organizations who would be getting presentations from tomorrow. Thank you very much for being part of this public hearings. We hope to see you again tomorrow, either presenting or just listening to other people who would be presenting. Thank you very much, members. Can we have just 5 minutes just to deal with house matters? Can people who want to leave just quietly leave, as we will be concluding today's business? Members, we have received correspondence from the Department of Justice. As you would be aware, they were supposed to appear before us on Wednesday for the ministry. In fact, the correspondence is the ministry was supposed to appear, in fact, is supposed to appear before us on Wednesday to give us an update on the master's office. They would be appearing before the NCOP Select Committee for the budget process on Wednesday next week. So they were asking that if we can rearrange the days so that they can be able to appear on a later date to us. So if the members, firstly, let me hear, because we said it will be the ministry that appears before us. So the minister and the deputy minister, they would be in the NCOP. So would we be open to find some other things on our program to deal with on Wednesday? In which case, I would suggest that we have taken this coming Wednesday, that is, in fact, tomorrow's, we're supposed to be dealing with the cannabis bill. So we'd be dealing with the public hearings. So my comprehensive suggestion is that we if we agree to rearrange the program to give the department or the ministry an opportunity to appear at a later date, that we deal with the cannabis bill. Would that be in order, colleagues?
In order, sir.
Thank you very much. Mr. Romano, please communicate with the department that we would find another date for them to appear before us on the update on the master's office. Please communicate with Mr. Roberts that we would be dealing with the cannabis bill on Wednesday next week. With that, members, that brings us to the end of our meeting. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Bye-bye.
Recording stopped.